This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Shope and the Bulldog.
John Clayton is being brought to you by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you. And by Goya. If it's Goya, it has to be good.
We are live at the Buffalo Convention Center tonight for tonight's Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame dinner. Mike Shope and the Bulldog joined now by the legend, John Clayton, joining us via the West Her Hotline. John, did you hear that story about the Clippers wearing Buffalo Braves jerseys tonight, and does that interest you?
Sure. I mean, why are they doing that?
Well, it's the same franchise, and we're in sort of this place and time where teams like their retro stuff, they can sell it.
Okay.
So that's probably it.
Yep.
Kind of unusual, but I guess it's interesting. Yeah, go Clippers.
Is it go Clippers. Is it unusual because it's like in a different city?
Well, different sport, I guess. I mean, that's the
No, same sport.
No, the Braves were in
Buffalo
NBA.
Braves.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. That's
yeah.
Good. Yeah.
They were our NBA team in the early to the mid-70s. Like by 78, it's over, I think.
Yeah. I thought maybe you would have known about them or followed them.
Yeah.
Maybe not?
Not really, no.
Not
no.
An NBA guy at
but,
all?
But
what's the weather going to be like in Cleveland on Sunday?
We just looked and saw a high of 51 and mostly cloudy and windy.
Oh, okay. So it's not going to be snowing or anything like that.
No, not so bad.
I go to that game or not. I was debating whether to see that game.
You would go to Cleveland on a Sunday and then San Francisco on Monday night. That does sound like you.
That would be correct. I need the miles, so that's one of the reasons I'd definitely do it.
All right.
So do you think you might go?
I mean, right now I got a ticket to fly there.
All right.
But again, it's like, I don't know. I mean, just having seen the Browns a couple weeks ago and knowing now that Baker Mayfield shaved off the end part of his mustache, I'm debating it might not be a good idea to go.
The end part of the mustache.
Yes,
yeah.
you were in Cleveland for when the Seahawks played them.
That is correct.
That was a good game. Bulldog was going to go to that game himself.
I was never really going to go to
that
game.
He was in town.
We talked about it. So I missed out. The mustache thing, like he shaved. He got to the stadium in a beard, shaved down to a Fu Manchu, and then shaved the Fu Manchu part off. I heard him today wrongly call it a handlebar. And it was not a handlebar that he was rocking during that game. I just want to set the record straight for facial hair enthusiasts across the world.
He sounds like he's somebody who should know with all these different attempts.
Handlebar is like the thing that, like Raleigh Fingers, John, you remember Raleigh Fingers.
I sure do, yeah.
That's a handlebar, right? You got like gel in that, and it's all twirled out.
You can grab onto it.
Right. Handlebars. It's sticking off your face like handlebars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Fu Manchu is like Joe Namath rocked that in the 70s. That's what Mayfield had for that game. He's got to get his facial hair commentary right before he's going to win anything.
Well, I mean, does that show you what a mess that team is?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, I'm down at the sidelines and I'm watching Odell Beckham Jr. show off his $350,000 watch to teammates. You've got him more worried about his facial look than getting the ball to Odell Beckham Jr. You've got him, you know, saying the lack of accountability for some of the players is not good right now. I mean, this is just a mess.
What do you make of the Browns at 2-6 being favored over the Bills at 6-2?
It's wrong. I mean, I think what they're looking at is that, I guess, home field plays into it. Obviously, the lack of respect the Bills are getting for, you know, what's likely to be an 11-win season with an easy record. I think that's all part of it. It's a lack of respect. I would imagine it's going to be a good motivating tool right now for the team. I think that could help out.
Do you think they deserve more respect?
Yes. Yeah, because, again, it's like, did everybody respect Chicago last year? I mean, they were 12-4. You know, they played the easy schedule. They only had five games against winning teams, and everybody respected them. What nobody realized, and I guess I don't know. It's such a down cycle in the AFC right now, so I don't think AFC gets much respect whatsoever, because always it's going to be the New England Patriots winning everything. But I think what it comes down to is that Chicago gets the respect for bouncing back and having Matt Nagy as coach and all these different things, and now this year they stink because they're playing a tougher schedule and they're not doing as well. And I look at it the same way right now with Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo, they've got a good defense. You know, they're playing easy teams and winning those games, and they're taking care of business, and that should be good enough, but apparently it's not good enough for the odds makers.
Do you think it's a good idea for the Browns to, if this is not the wrong word, it might be overstating it a little, force the ball to Beckham on Sunday against the Bills, John?
I think it's dangerous. I know that's been the theme that's been there the last 2 days, to try to do it that way, and they need to get him more involved in the game. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. goes there, is one of the best young receivers in the league, and he hasn't had a touchdown pass since week two, and he's almost not a non-factor because of the double coverage. But I think any time you start forcing the ball when you've got one of the leaders in turnovers, you lead yourself into trouble, particularly a smart defense like the Bills have. That, I think, could be problematic.
What is the – let's talk about the Bears again for a minute, like last year's Bears. We compared Trubisky, hopefully, or just looking forward to the season, Josh Allen year two, maybe comparing with Trubisky's year two. And, for the most part, we did so because we considered that successful. Statistically, for the most part, it was successful. The wins were there. They did lose the playoff game. They missed the field goal, or else they would have won that playoff game anyway. Then this year, it's like off the rails with Trubisky. I can't believe how harsh it is toward him. Like, everybody seems to be done. What's the lesson in that comparison, if there is one, or was it wrong in the first place?
Well, I guess what it is that it's the reaction of fans when things go wrong. They're going to blame one of two people. They're going to blame the quarterback, or they're going to blame the coach. And then if the losing continues, then they want to run both out of town. And so that, I think, is just kind of the nature of football and the nature of sports. And so you can see, it's like, I mean, there's no winning right now for Trubisky in that town, and now they're starting to turn on Nagy. And I think that's wrong, because I think still we're in that phase where you take young quarterbacks and you're probably moving them up too quickly, because you want them to play in the first year. They play in the first year, and if they struggle, next thing you know, they're being criticized.
What do you think this year, one of the stories of this year, we've been talking a lot about it in the last couple of weeks, is how many quarterbacks have gone in. There have been injuries and different reasons for that. Kyle Allen is one of several that fit this criteria, and they haven't looked bad. They might even have looked good. That's Minshew with Jacksonville before he was pulled. You know, a guy like Ryan Finley goes in for Cincinnati, and unlike other years, this year I'm thinking, well, maybe he's fine. Like, it's just sort of, it seems like the right approach to this year is that the backups are holding their own.
Mm-hmm, they are. And that is unusual, particularly the poor way the NFL is developing the backups. I mean, because now, each year it seems like you have 8 or 9 quarterbacks that are backup quarterbacks on 2 quarterback rosters, and they've never had a start, which I think is kind of crazy, because that's why this NFL needs a developmental league, or they need a XFL to help get these quarterbacks who don't get a chance to play to get a chance to play. But no, it's been uncharacteristically good, because, again, using that old Ted Marchabrota line that, if you have a good backup quarterback, you go out and you play him 3 games and he wins you 3, but if you play him 6, he'll lose you 3. But if you can get more 500 quarterbacks, and this year more guys are emerging as 500 quarterbacks or better. Gardner Minshew, who is 4-4, then you've got Kyle Allen, who's 5-1, you had Teddy Bridgewater, who's 5-0, I mean, Jacoby Brissett, he's 5-3, now that he's now technically the starting quarterback. So there's been a lot of better type of surprises like that, and that's a good thing. I mean, Brandon Allen, nobody's ever heard about. I mean, he ended up just beating the Cleveland Browns in his first start ever.
I have not seen Kyle Allen throw a pass, so I'm not here to declare whether or not I mean, I could see the numbers and I could see the wins, but I have no idea, like, what kind of quality he represents. With that said, what do you think the Panthers end up doing with Cam Newton, John?
I think they move on, because he's going to make $21.1 million. And here's what's working against him. His running style has caused him to have 2 shoulder injuries, to a point where last year he couldn't get the ball deep. He couldn't get it over like 20, 25 yards downfield. Number 2 is that You know, he's now got the Liz Frank injury. He's 31 years old. The body's starting to fall apart. So then you also look at what's happened his last eight starts. He's 0-8. And this is at a time where Kyle Allen's on the same team as the backup, and he was 1-0 last year and 5-1 this year. So something's amiss right now, and there's enough available quarterbacks that I think that they can negotiate something. You know, I don't know if it's a trade that they can trade Cam Newton, but let me look at the quarterbacks you can get. I'm not saying they're great answers, but you can get Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, and several others. You can trade for Andy Dalton, who has a favorable contract. So there's enough, I think, they can do, that it's just time to move on from Cam Newton. As great as he's been for them, and he's been good. I mean, he has an MVP to his credit. He has a Super Bowl trip to his credit, but he's got a lot of injuries. And he also wears bad outfits.
Right. Oh, come on. You'd wear those clothes all day.
With all that said, if they were to just out and out release him, get out from under the contract, does he get a massive contract from a new team? What's the future for him?
I'm kind of thinking he'll get kind of a Jacoby Brissett contract, maybe $15 million. It would have to be kind of a prove-it type of contract because, again, first you have to see, okay, where's the body at? How healthy is the guy? Then the next thing is to go and look and say, all right, how do you fit into the type of offense? And it's like, and then you ask him the big question, are you now going to take the tack that it's like you're going to listen to us and not just run the ball and run over people and try to expose your body to so much injury and pain?
There might be half the teams in the league where right now it would be tough to predict who their starter is next year. Do you think it's that many?
No, I don't think so. I mean, normally it's going to be, you know, 7 or 8. I mean, this year was a little bit less. But you have so many young quarterbacks that have come in here the last 3 years. You've got to give them time to be able to figure out if they're good, bad, or indifferent. Now, maybe that's going to be the case with Chicago. Chicago may take the tack that's like, okay, we've got to give up on Mitch Trubisky. But, you know, a lot of the quarterbacks from last year's draft, they're not going to give up. They're not going to give up on Sam Darnold. They're not going to give up on, you know, obviously Josh Allen's going to be fine and all that. But, you know, you give them an extra year or so, so they're not going to be in the market for quarterbacks. Plus, they all have affordable rookie contracts.
Are you sure about that with respect to Darnold, that – like, if this Jet season plays out the way it has so far, that they would, like, he would just not, no questions asked, be their starting quarterback at the beginning of next season?
I mean, the only thing that they might do, and I don't think they necessarily would do it, I mean, first, if he continues struggling like he's struggling now, it's going to be on Adam Gase. He's going to be the one that's going to be sacrificed because they're going to take the tack. Adam didn't do a good job of coaching up Sam Darnold, but they'll give Darnold another year. Now, maybe what they do as a counter is bring in a good backup quarterback to at least challenge him, a veteran, that if things don't go right. But I think Sam has too much talent to just say, okay, one bad season is going to wipe this guy off our slates. I mean, you've seen it, you know, like even like one of the bad case scenarios from like the 2011 draft. Remember that was Sam Ponder, and that was
Christian Ponder.
Christian Ponder, not
his wife. Course, yes,
yeah, that's his wife. But yeah, Christian Ponder, and then
Gabbert.
You got Blake Bortles, and you know, even with Blake Bortles, as bad as he was, he had the one good year when they went to the AFC Championship game. So I don't think you give up on a quarterback like Darnold that early.
One veteran name to keep in mind for that perhaps is Tom Brady. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what about Drew Brees? What about Phillip Rivers? What about Eli Manning?
None of them has a contract. That's right. Yeah. That's right. What about Pittsburgh?
Right now, they're anticipating Ben Roethlisberger being back. In fact, they think that with the elbow, he should be able to start throwing by the OTAs.
How many – you mentioned Adam Gase there. Kitchens seems like he's in trouble. How many coaching vacancies? Those guys would have, you know, the notoriety of being one and dones if they do get fired. I don't know. Are you assuming both of those guys even make it to the end of the season, John?
I'm assuming, yeah. I mean, you still look at Cleveland's schedule, and it's all favorable. I mean, I thought, yeah, particularly going against Denver, that I just did a quick scan of the schedule, and I said, yep, they'll finish 7-9. And then that obviously changed because they ended up losing to Denver, and I was anticipating they would lose to Buffalo. But again, they still have enough winnable games that I think that they can, you know, get the 6 wins now. But that's not going to get – that'll keep them in the ballpark, But if they continue to lose to losing teams, then he'll get. I think he'll get axed out before the end of the season. And same thing for Adam Gase. I mean, Adam Gase has favorable, easy games coming up, but you can't lose to a Miami Dolphin team, particularly a team that you coached, and anticipate that you have some longevity as bad as this season has gone.
Who's your pick right now to finish last and pick first?
I still go with Miami because I still think the effort's there. The talent isn't there. I mean, you know, with they only have now one remaining player that's been to the Pro Bowl, one, and that's Rashad Jones, and he's still banged up. And so that's not good. And because now when they put Xavier Howard on the injured reserve list, that cut their list of Pro Bowl caliber players in half, and they don't have a lot on the roster. They don't have a good offensive line. And you know how it is with Ryan Fitzpatrick. He goes into that good backup quarterback tally. So, again, he's going to start fading here in about a week or two. And that means that they'll have to go back to Josh Rosen, and everything's all set for that 2-14 season.
You know, the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, one thought that was out there that I had about that trade is, okay, so you're trading a safety for first round picks. Like, what difference does that really make? Like, he's a good player, okay, but how is this going to save Pittsburgh? And I think if you think about a couple specific games, that has been worth a lot already. The play he made against Indianapolis, there's no bigger play in that game. Indianapolis can still win it with a field goal that they miss, and they miss. And then the game against the Dolphins even, like, maybe that's even a Dolphins win if he plays for Miami instead of Pittsburgh that night. Maybe not, but it's possible. So it's interesting, like, the Steelers, that's a huge risk that they took, obviously, with that trade. And so far, they look great for it.
Oh, I see. Here's what they're thinking is that they didn't care. Because one of the things that they did last year, which is a little un-Pittsburgh-like, is they traded with Denver to move up to get the 10th pick so they can get Devin Bush. Mm-hmm. And they figured, okay, here's our Pro Bowl caliber inside linebacker for many, many years. And he's raw right now, but he still has the talent to be able to do it. With Minkah Fitzpatrick, their thought was, hey, I don't care if we're drafting 7th, 8th, or 9th in the draft. This guy's better than anybody we're going to get in next year's draft at that number. And so they took the risk, and they came out big. He's had 4 interceptions, including a pick six. He's had 2 forced fumbles. He's had a fumble recovery. He's been fantastic. And so their thinking was he can help get this defense better quicker if we get him now, and we have him for a couple years. And that's why I think it may look like the Dolphins fleece the Steelers. I think the Steelers fleece the Dolphins.
It looks to me like the Bears trade, and maybe with the Raiders, and maybe a better example is the Amari Cooper trade, where the team getting the pick looks great. I mean, the Raiders never didn't look great for what they got anyway. Like, why trade Khalil Mack, and that's why trade Minkah Fitzpatrick or Tunsil or even Cooper. But you still get that pick, and that's worth a lot. But the player has to really matter on that team, and that's happened here in the way that Mack did, mm-hmm. and Cooper. Like, Dallas would not have wanted a do-over, I assume, on the trade they made for Amari Cooper, because he's really mattered for them.
Oh, no question. I mean, you can make the argument that those two trades changed the whole scale of things in the NFC last year. You put Mack, who is a generational-type player, on that team, and with the easy schedule and everything favorable, particularly with Vic Fangio coaching, they end up going 12-4. You look at with Dallas, I don't think Dallas would have made the playoffs without Amari Cooper. And now you see even this year, even though he's battling injury, Cooper, and again, it's funny because here's Cooper, a first-round talent. You're thinking, okay, it's all talent. His route running is sensational. And so now Dak Prescott is putting up numbers he's never put up before. And so that changed the balance of power in the NFC last year and really helped make 2 playoff teams. Now, the interesting transition is that Oakland now is starting to get some benefit from that trade. I mean, they get Josh Jacobs, who I think is going to be the AFC or the he'll be the offensive rookie of the year for his running ability. And, we'll have to study how the rest of those picks go. I mean, again, they don't have a pass rush in Oakland. That's one thing they're still missing. That's just part of it. But, remember, I mean, that's why the records are so askew this year, because the Raiders are a 6-10 team that's 4-4. you know, you look at the Bills, they're a 9-win team that's going to win 11, and I still stand by 11. I just look at everything, I just think it's going to be 11. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and I haven't changed. I mean, I'm staying with that. But again, it's like an 8 or 9 win team that's going to win 11. Hey, that's the breaks of the game.
This is the week for that prediction.
Right. Yeah. If they get this one, then I think the 11, who knows?
Maybe I could see more. It if they win this week.
Yeah, right.
Otherwise, I think they,
yep.
that would be
same here.
A lot.
Yep.
John, any questions for us?
So are we all clippered out with the uniforms and all that?
Right.
I love them.
I'm glad we got to establish why it made some sense that it was
actually.
Yeah,
because I was wondering, it's like, why do we have basketball uniforms?
That does, yeah. Yeah,
yeah that's – okay. I don't remember the Braves. I don't go back to the Braves, but
yeah, particularly in hockey, I guess like you just can't have open sleeves. I mean, you got to have sleeves.
No, great point. Finally, someone said it. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
All right, John Clayton there with us every Thursday at 5. His appearance brought to you by Goya. If it's Goya, it has to be good. And by Northwest Bank, increasing the value of you. We will turn our attention to point spreads and the like when Evan Abrams will join us from the Action Network coming up momentarily here. Right now, I want to talk to you about the folks at CarShield. I've just gotten familiar with them here in the last few weeks. We all know, like you drive a pretty current model vehicle, you know that computer systems are the new normal, from electronically controlled transmissions, touchscreen displays, dozens of sensors. All that advanced tech is awesome, but it's expensive to fix if and when it breaks. That's where CarShield comes in. CarShield has affordable protection plans that can save you thousands for a covered repair, including those computers, GPS units, electronics, and more. You can choose your plan. Your favorite mechanic or dealership will do the work. CarShield takes care of the rest. They also offer 24/7 roadside assistance on a rental car while yours is being fixed free of charge. CarShield has helped over 1 million customers, so drive with confidence knowing you've got coverage from America's number one auto protection provider. Whether your vehicle currently has 5,000 miles or 150,000 miles, it's inevitable. Something is going to break down. Get covered by CarShield today. Call 800-CAR-6000. Mention the code word Bulldog or visit carshield.com and use the code word, again, Bulldog, to save 10%. It's carshield.com, code word Bulldog. A deductible may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
I hate this. I don't believe in this Thursday football. I'm not going to be on my soapbox any more than that. It hurts us. Hurts both teams, obviously, the preparation. We take a lot of pride in getting our guys ready to play. We need a little time to do that, but a lot of people disagree with me, obviously. So it'll be a challenge.
John Gruden, straight talk.
Good for him.
Good for him. The Raiders and Chargers are the game tonight, and it's important. I mean, it's a pretty good game tonight for one of these. Spread is around one. Looks like an even matchup. Classic rivalry.
Yeah.
And it matters in the AFC. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, at the Convention Center for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame dinner on the Western Hotline right now as our regular guest at this time each week, Evan Abrams from the Action Network. Evan, I have a story for you that I should have told you last week.
Oh, boy. Line them up. Let's go.
Well, we're all learning a lot having you on every week. For some reason I can't explain, this is before the Miami-Pittsburgh Monday night game.
Okay.
I got a little carried away with a prop bet. And as it happened, I had a prop bet on Diontae Johnson, the Steelers receiver, mm-hmm. to score a touchdown, have the Steelers win, and total at least 120 receiving yards. And the price was 40 to 1.
Like, yeah, that seems like some parlay.
Some parlay. Right on. 40 to 1. Now, it almost hit. There was a pat. He had the game. They won the game, and he had the touchdown, and there was a late miss that would have done it. And that's gambling. I mean, it was a long shot for a reason. But I don't know if we've talked about prop bets with you. Like, 40 to 1, I'm close. Maybe almost all the time you feel like you're close, or often you'll feel like you're close. Are bets like that ever worth doing?
I mean, parlays, I mean, overall is where the books make their money. I mean, what you're talking about are kind of two separate things. Props are a very valuable right. tool and are something that people who do analysis like we do at Fantasy Labs, it's a very profitable way to bet. Now, usually the issue with props sometimes is you can't get as much money down as you can on sides and totals at certain, you know, books. So that sometimes is the issue there. But parlays is where, you know, yeah. that's where the books make their money. But it's fun. I mean, there's certain things like round-robin parlays that are really fun. If you got like four or five underdogs that you really like on a Saturday or Sunday and two or three of those underdogs hit, sometimes you can make a profit. So that's fun as well.
So as you became more disciplined at this, parlays, teasers, all that stuff, you just walked away from it? Is that generally,
well,
is that about
I mean,
right?
Not really. I mean, teasers are actually really, really profitable, but you have to do them correctly. I only play teasers when it teases through two key numbers. So usually, like, a team with +1, +1.5, +2, you're going to tease through 3. You're going to tease through 4. You're going to tease through 6. You're going to tease through 7. To me, that's where you start getting profitable teasers, is when you can start teasing through lots of different key numbers. Like, you never want to tease through 0.
Okay, right.
That, you know, that because then, you know, you're basically wasting money and wasting half numbers on, you know, numbers that never come into play.
And you can, in this day and age at least, you can decide how many points you'll take or whatever. Like, you can move that just pretty much anywhere you want it. Is there that much flexibility?
Depending on the book. I mean, listen, as these books start getting bigger, certain books like PointsBet, you can really start moving them almost as many times as you want. But usually it's 6-point teasers, 6.5-point teasers, 7-point teasers.
Right.
That's why teasing through the key numbers becomes such an important thing, because if you don't, you end up kind of wasting money to a degree. Because remember, you're paying for every half point, you're paying for every point.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Evan.
All right, what do you think of tonight here? We mentioned it as we're coming
sure.
in. It's a pretty tasty game in the AFC playoff race as these things go. What are your thoughts on Chargers and Raiders?
Yeah, I'm actually going to play both the side in the total here. I like the Chargers. I like the Chargers for a few different reasons. LA, listen, they've struggled to defend the run this year. I am worried to God's hell on Josh Jacobs. So I have a ticket on him to win Rookie of the Year. He was my pick. He has been unbelievable this year. But I actually kind of like L.A. in this spot. The Chargers have played really, really well away from L.A. They basically have no home field advantage. It's literally almost 0 points. But on the road, they're 14-5 against the spread over the past 3 seasons. They do a really good job at getting away from where they come from and doing well out there. I also have the under. The under started at 47.5, went up to 49. At 49, I took it. It's now down to about 48.5, 48 at some places. To me, this just makes sense. It's a division game. I'm worried a little bit about Oakland's pass defense. I'm hoping, and first half unders have been a thing in prime time, so I'm hoping a bit of a slow thing out the gate, but Chargers in the under for me, guys.
Did I hear that Philip, I didn't see it, but I heard it, that Philip Rivers' passing yard prop was 300? He leads the league in passing yards.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if it's up there around 300, I wouldn't be shocked. Like I said, listen, Oakland's pass defense is absolutely atrocious. They're literally one of the worst in the NFL. So it's one of the things I'm worried about. Rivers is going to try to air it out. So that's definitely on the radar.
Okay. Yeah, how about that? Like, that might surprise you to hear he's number one. And also I read that their receivers have not scored a touchdown in 4 games. At least 4 games, the Chargers. This is the perfect
matchup to get right on track. So I mean,
okay.
What I'm thinking is Gruden doesn't like the matchup. He doesn't like playing on Thursday Night Football. I think he's going to really, really lean on Jacobs here. I mean, Carr is one of the most accurate passers in the NFL and has been for years. And it's usually because they're not airing it out a ton, right? And Jacobs has been so good this year. So that's one of the things I'm going to look at, especially if it starts slow in this game and the clock starts rolling.
How about 2-6 Browns favored against the 6-2 Bills, John? Evan, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is actually a really, really heavy play for me. I enjoy Cleveland in this game. I got to be honest. Buffalo 6-2 straight up, 5-3 against the spread. They're absolutely rolling, and Cleveland is on the other side. And when you get into that spot where you've got bad ATS teams against good ATS teams this late in the year, the bad team usually covers. It's above 60%. It's 62% when you get into this scenario. It works for Cleveland, Atlanta, and Tampa this weekend. And Bill, to me, guys, the Bills are just a bunch of little frauds. I mean, they face the Jets, the Giants, the Bengals, the Dolphins, the Redskins. And I'm really worried about Nick Chubb. I think Buffalo's pass defense is one of the best in the NFL, but their run defense is a huge issue. And I think Chubb is going to do a real, real job on them. So that's the way I look at it. They're ranked 30th in run defense in DVOA, over 4.5 yards per carry. And the only worry here is Kitchens. I need him to be smart and play this right. So it's an awful, awful bet when I'm looking at it like that. But if he plays it right, I think Cleveland actually gets the job done.
All right. You've said something here that we will definitely either way follow up on next week with your comment about the Bills. Evan, what's the logic, by the way, behind that trend that you mentioned with the spread? Is it mostly based in that the spread, like that's the water level? Like if a team is beating the spread in the first half, that they should stop doing that? There'll be an overreaction or something?
100%. Usually overreaction ends up happening, especially when they walk in with those type of circumstances and they walk in with expectations. 100%. That's okay. Usually how the market ends up reacting. And especially when you have the bad ATS. Listen, against the spread is supposed to even it out at some level. So when you get to a point in the season and you get a team who 2-6 against the spread facing a team who has been rolling and playing really, really well, the trend tends to go with the team. And no one finishes 1-14 against the spread. So It ends up evening out, and it shows over time.
All right. Do you have something on Ravens-Bengals before we go?
Sure. I mean, I'm going to hold my nose here. I like the Bengals, and so do a bunch of my colleagues this week, and it's not going to be fun. Cincinnati's lost by 1 to Seattle, 2 to Buffalo, 6 to Baltimore. And the trend I look at here, teams after playing New England, 1-8 against the spread this year, worse than the NFL. It is going to be tough to come off a 17-point win against the Patriots and get up for, 10-point spread, which the Ravens haven't been in, almost a decade, a road favorite of 10 points. So I'm going to hold my nose here. Cincinnati, number one in special teams, Baltimore third. And usually Baltimore has the advantage in special teams. So maybe that comes into play. It did earlier when Cincinnati had a run back touchdown. So we'll see how it goes, and we'll see if the 10 points matter.
All right. You've got your reasons. I like it. Evan, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week.
Lots of fun. Thanks, guys.
Evan Abrams from the Action Network. If you are looking for an edge, download the free Action Network app and get live odds and expert analysis for every game. On Baltimore, Lamar Jackson missed practice today. He's sick, apparently. How sick are you if you miss practice at this point? Are you like
fever?
I can't get out of bed.
At risk of getting everyone else sick. Sick.
So you all right? So it still might be. That's the kind of job you want.
Yeah.
Where you're sick, people get sick, but work really doesn't want you to come in.
Right. He's got enough time to get well. I have no idea what's ailing him, but it's only Thursday. He'll get by. All right, we'll take a timeout here. We come back. We're expected to be joined by one of tonight's inductees right after this. Right now, I want to talk to you about Franco's Pizza, and that's because Franco's means fresh. When it comes to pizza on a game day or a game night, hey, it's a football game on TV tonight. There are playoff permutations, so maybe that'll be a night for you tonight. Franco's means fresh. That means fresh meats, fresh cheeses, dough made daily, pizza sauce made daily. Everything is fresh. You can taste it each and every time you order from Franco's. Speaking of fresh, Franco's is always coming up with fresh new ideas for their specialty pizza menu. Stuffed banana pepper pizza is currently a new favorite, topped with hot banana peppers, melted mozzarella, fontanella cheese, crumbly blue cheese over a delicious garlic sauce. If you're looking to try something new as it pertains to wing flavors, check out Franco's new Jamaican jerk barbecue sauce. A little sweet to start, finishes hot. So keep that in mind next time you're ordering from Franco's. Maybe that'll be tonight. Maybe that'll be tomorrow afternoon when there's a hockey game at a weird time, 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday. Franco's, of course, available for pickup or delivery. You can call any one of their five great Northtown locations. I like the website, francospizza.com. Really convenient, really easy to order. Pay online with a debit card or a credit card. I love it. Very reliable. And the food is always excellent. So keep it in mind. Game day or any other day, Franco's means.
Welcome back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame ceremony, which is tonight, the dinner, getting underway in a little over an hour. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at the Convention Center, joined by Peter Skamura, who is one of the inductees tonight. And you, unfortunately, had an accident recently. As Bulldog and you were just talking about, pretty tough timing for the event.
Absolutely, yeah. It's going to be one of those things. I'm sure I'll get through it, but I would much rather have other circumstances, absolutely.
Well, this is it's quite an honor. I'm assuming your family and everyone are very excited about this. Having been someone who came up and made the NHL in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, like, how different the hockey world was then. Like, to get noticed enough to go, Bob Johnson noticed you. There were college opportunities, and then eventually Peterborough with Roger Nielsen, right, and then the NHL. Like, that, I don't know, growing up here, I grew up in the 70s. It seemed like something that was a completely foreign concept to me. And now it feels like a lot more normal.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, it's more normal. It was, and it's a little bit in my speech tonight. Hockey wasn't as structured back then as it is now. There were no clinics, there were no development, there was none of that stuff. I certainly wasn't involved in it. And it was strictly, you pick up a game, you pick up a pair of skates, you get a couple guys, and you go play. And that was for my first 2-3 years. I started late, and it was my first 2-3 years of hockey was that. And then eventually mushroomed into, you know, when I eventually got... You move up the sports ladder, obviously. You start playing junior. I played for Willie Marshall, and that's where I was noticed to get my scholarship to Wisconsin with Bob Johnson, and then Roger saw me, and then things went on from there.
How difficult a decision was it to leave college and really turn pro, leave college behind and go to the – at the time it was the OHA, not the OHL, right?
Correct. It was very tough because, first of all, as you said, they weren't taking American hockey players. And so to leave your full scholarship and your chance for a really good education with our great coach, Bob Johnson is one of my favorite people in the world. We lost him way too early. But to leave there and then go to a foreign place that I wasn't real comfortable with, it was an all-Canadian league essentially, mm-hmm, and to go there and play and leave the confines of college to go up there, it was difficult. It was a difficult move because there weren't obviously very many Americans up in that league either.
And did you make that decision because you thought it would be a better way to get to the NHL, fastest way to get to the NHL?
Absolutely. Yeah, Roger talked to my dad a little bit about it, and there wasn't much choice. I mean, if you wanted to be drafted, you needed to go there.
Yeah.
They drafted out of the WHA, the OHA, and of course the Quebec League, and that was about it.
Right.
You know, and then the college kids went in the fourth and fifth round or whatever.
Yeah.
So that was my main reason, sure.
Nielsen is a unique figure in hockey history too. Like, there aren't too many guys that sound like they were much like Roger Nielsen as far as coaching goes, Captain Video and all that. He cast a certain figure.
He was my most detailed coach and probably who I learned the most from. I had very good coaches and very good people along the way, Willie Marshall included. But Roger probably taught me the most, and he taught me the back end of the game, you know, the three zones was very important to him. And, of course, he coached that way when he got to the NHL. He was not – if you were a freestyle front-running scorer, you probably wouldn't want to play for Roger. You know,
how How much time would you need to describe the ways that the league is different now?
Oh, my Lord. It would take forever.
On and off the ice.
Yeah, it would take a long time. I mean, it was a lot different back then. The physical aspect of the game was a big part of the game. And that was one of the major reasons they wanted you to come out of the OHA, just because there was the fighting, the physical aspect of the game rather than college. But it was just the European influence wasn't there as much. Of course, there were a few, but not as much. And the game was nowhere near as detailed and as analytical as it is now. I mean, we just sort of were sent out and played. And that was my experience anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So it was quite different. It was quite different.
For folks who don't know, Peter was the 14th overall pick in the draft. You had the distinction up until, I don't know, a few years ago now. I can't remember what year Patrick Kane was drafted, but you were the highest drafted Western New Yorker until Patrick went where he went, obviously.
Right.
Hard to beat that.
That'll be a tough score.
Yeah, that's a tough score to beat.
Right.
Your career, injuries mostly undid it? Like what was the story of your pro career?
I mean, I played my first year with a broken wrist the whole year, and I had a cast on so that I couldn't shoot. I still played. And then after that, I went through 5 or 6 knee surgeries and a really bad groin injury. And that just, I couldn't get 60, 70 games together. I was playing 20 and then hurt and then playing another 15 and that kind of stuff. And after 5 or 6 years, it got a little old for Washington. And I don't blame them, you know, when they released me on waivers. And no one wants to pick up an older player that's had that many. And I had a couple teams look at me, but their doctors wouldn't let me pass the physical. So the injuries played an important part, or an unfortunate part in the whole thing, but better players than myself have gone through it, so it's just part of the deal.
Let's talk about Haley for a minute. She's quite prominent in women's hockey. I think even maybe my daughter was at a clinic with her through the Bisons a couple of years ago.
Well, now I'm Haley's dad. That's why.
Right.
What do you think about the incredible, I would say, rise in that sport, then professionally, and just what it is right now?
For the women, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember her last game at Northeastern, and she played against Boston College, and she got hurt and whatever. And I figured that was her last game. She was a senior. And then I talked to Rick Seeling, who was coaching the Buttes at the time, and then that sort of went together, and they won the Isabel Cup. And then it's moved on to this new chapter now with this new league, which I'm not 100% positive where it's going, but it sounds like a really positive thing. And then, of course, she's been fortunate enough to make the U.S. national team for the women. And so she's actually in Pittsburgh now. That's why she can't be here tonight. They're playing Canada tomorrow and Sunday. So I'm hoping to get down there Sunday if I'm feeling okay. But
best rivalry in hockey.
Oh, it's great. The games are great. The games are very exciting. So the game's definitely getting better. They're very exciting games, and the women are starting to get some exposure. So it's looking quite up from, well, when she started playing at age 6, there were no girls' teams. She played with me, with the boys, until 14.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then I moved her over slowly as more and more girls came on. So,
All right.
You're in the Buffalo Tennis Hall of Fame as of last year. My wife went in this year.
Oh, congratulations.
You and your brother?
David and I, yep.
And you played at a high level, states, and then?
We played in national tournaments. I think we were the only ones at that time that went to the elite tournaments, the Western Open, the Nationals, and all those tournaments. We had a high enough ranking. And then, of course, Jimmy came along and put a hole through that and, you know, climbed the ladder very quickly. But up to that point, we were competing against some pretty tough hombres.
Yes. As a kid tennis player on Grand Island, I knew all about Jimmy Arias.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly from John Roth, who I've seen walking around here talking about. And John was you probably know him. I mean, excellent player, excellent athlete, all sports, and just like watching. If I have the story, I know I have at least mostly right, having Jimmy Arias in like 6th grade just blow him away.
Yeah.
that would be kind of tough to deal with there for a minute.
Yeah.
All right, Peter, congratulations on tonight. Glad we met.
Thank you so much for the time.
All right, enjoy
your
night. Thank you. All right.
Thanks, guys.
Peter Skamura here at the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame dinner. We'll have more after the update. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.